Veteran journalist Essex Porter has been a news reporter for 4 decades and recently retired. He shared some fond memories, some funny stories, and talked about what it takes to be a successful journalist. All on All the Way Authentic. I'm your host, Kevin P. Henry.
So what inspired you, or what was that seed, or when did you first think, oh, I might want to pursue a career in journalism? So you could just take me back to that.
You know, I really didn't decide on journalism until I was in high school, and probably not until I was really a senior in high school. I'm a military kid. I attended 2 high schools. One was in Kansas. The other one was in Hawaii. Mm. I have to admit, couldn't quite get to the one in Hawaii soon enough, but I made it for my senior year. I had a great high school newspaper with great fun people and a great teacher advisor. And I really sort of fell in love with it then. I was assembling page one, and I was writing a what I thought was a funny humor column inside. Sometimes it actually was funny, but you know, that's when I really got energized. But
and what by the way, what island were you on in Hawaii?
I was on Oahu. My father was assigned to Fort Shafter, the Army base made famous in the movies about Pearl Harbor, where planes fly over the circle of palm trees. I lived very close to the circle of palm trees. That really is a military base, and people really do live there. And that was my senior year in high school. I truly enjoyed it. I did not intend to go to college in Hawaii. I was looking for strong journalism schools. And because I lived in Kansas, I had driven past the University of Nebraska, and I had come to learn that it had a very strong journalism school, and that just felt comfortable. So I applied, and fortunately ended up there. It was a good choice.
And what part of journalism appealed to you? Was it the, you know, interviewing people, or was it the actual writing or the research? Was there something in particular that really resonated with you about it?
What really resonated with me about it was the chance to be an eyewitness to history. My family watched the news every night at dinner. You would see history being made. This was the mid and late 60s, early 70s. I remember learning the word filibuster because it was 1964, and the Civil Rights Act was trying to get through Congress, and there was a long filibuster that eventually broke. But yeah, and then, you know, it's a story I like to tell because it didn't occur to me until I had been in journalism for decades. Maybe, you know, the seed was planted. President Kennedy was assassinated.
Okay.
So, you know, here's my journey to journalism. It didn't have to be very old at the time for November 22nd, 1963, to become embossed in your memory. At the time, I was in second grade going to a school in Junction City, Kansas. I left our new house in Junction City just as the CBS News Bulletin of Slide had appeared on the screen. And this was about lunchtime. Back in those days, even elementary school kids were allowed to walk home to lunch and then go back to class. Well, I'd finished lunch. It was time to walk back to school after lunch. So I saw the bulletin slide, but I didn't know that President Kennedy had been killed until I got back to Westwood Elementary. This is back when there was no cable TV. So the strongest TV signal came from the CBS affiliate WIBW in Topeka, Kansas. It was 60 miles away from where I was in Junction City. CBS News anchor Walter Cronkite would later be called the most trusted man in America. He was already the most trusted newscaster in the Porterhouse, and we could not turn away from the coverage. So I really had planned on, kind of thought I would grow up to be a scientist, but looking back, that history-making Kennedy assassination coverage is the reason I ended up chasing down a kind of a fraudulent candidate for state Supreme Court. I'm trying to get him to answer questions that he doesn't want to answer. And, you know, a lot of my journalism was not quite that dramatic as it looks, but you're often trying to get people to answer questions they don't quite want to answer, but ultimately they know they should in some way. And it's your job to do the reporting to flesh out those the answers and those stories.
And that's what I wanted to touch on is the when I was in I was still in college, but I got a job at a newspaper in Los Angeles. And I'm in the newsroom, and you had two ways you could go. You could either go to news or you could go to features in terms of, you know, what road you wanted to go down. And it was a very easy decision for me to go to features because the features people were having all the fun as far as I was concerned. I mean, they were going to the parties and they were talking to celebrities. Everybody wanted to talk to them basically because it's an author that's trying to, you know, get publicity for their new book or an actor trying to talk about it.
Right.
And the news people always had to like you know, chasing people down, talking to people whose, you know, parents just got run over by a train or something. And now you have to sit there and go, so, well, tell me how you're feeling. And I said, oh, this is so depressing. And then I thought, I also couldn't interject any kind of humor or be real creative or funny with the story because it's always this hard news. But you went for the hard news. So tell me why didn't you go to features? What was it about news that really got you?
Well, you know, news is where the history was made. It you know, going into college, on my way to college, in August of 74 is when President Nixon resigned over Watergate. There had been, you know, a couple of really history making years before that. I grew up when the U.S. was in the middle of the Vietnam War, and I lived on Okinawa for a total of 7 years, split between Kansas for all that. An Army kid, you know, we were reading about that in the papers, watching that on TV. I remember I was quite young at the time, but I still remember the headline in the newspaper, The Stars and Stripes. They had an extra edition on Okinawa when John Glenn orbited the Earth, the first American to orbit the Earth. You know, I just remember all those just highlights in history and was always fascinated by them. So I wasn't drawn to you know, the sort of features that you were drawn to, where you might be interviewing the book author, the actor, the actress. In my career, you know, I did do features, and I actually got to do some of those stories. But you know, probably my favorite features were just regular people doing something just really interesting and trying to capture their joy for those stories. And, you know, those were always a nice break from running around the legislature or city hall. You know, I always came back to those stories about government and politics because I just felt those were the most important things for people to know and the most historic things for me to witness.
Well, very good point. I mean, definitely the most important things to know, because I went to a lot of garden parties, and if nobody ever read about that, you know, it wasn't going to be any kind of life-changing thing. One thing I wanted to ask you, because I know that, you know, you're a writer and you've written articles and you did the thing with the newspapers and you're writing all the time. But a lot of times I've seen you, you know, you're on location somewhere covering a story. What is that like? Was that a easy transition for you to go from, okay, well, now I'm standing here at Third and Pike and I've got the cameraman and I've got to be able to relate to that person sitting in their living room? What is that like?
Well, you know, and I should be clear, you know, for better or worse, you know, I did not have the experience of working professionally for a newspaper. I did work for my high school paper. But that's probably the last news. That's probably the last newspaper I've written anything for. You know, I focused on broadcasting in college. I was able in Nebraska to get a great internship at a radio station. And even back then in Nebraska, they paid interns. So that was sort of my professional start. And then when I graduated from college, I had good luck and good timing again. Really great professors who knew that I wasn't from Nebraska would not be going home to my local radio station, but realized that there was a television station in Omaha that really, really needed a reporter. And they thought I could at least handle it enough so that if the people there helped me, I could still be an asset to the station. I was a complete rookie, but they felt it would be a good situation for me, and they were right. That's how I got my full-time start in television.
And so you're on TV, and again, taking you back to your Third and Pike or wherever, and it's some breaking story or something. Was it when you first started doing that? Was that easy? And one reason I'm asking is because my background was in print, and the first time I had to like talk into a camera, and there was only the camera person there, it was a very strange experience because I was used to being a the having some theater
Right.
experience. I was used to people talking to actual people. But here you're talking to basically into a camera. And do you have like a certain approach or a certain, Essex Porter style to doing this kind of thing?
Oh, any approach or style, is sort of developed on the job through trial and error, because, I fortunately I worked with experienced colleagues. If you ever watch CBS News 48 Hours, where they do the true crimes, one of their correspondents is Peter Van Zandt. He was a senior reporter at the station in Omaha when I joined. He literally showed me how to do the stand-up, to stand in front of the camera, present. But it's not just presenting. Most of the time you are recording those. And you're recording them hours before you finish the story. So you need to record something that's going to work out, even if there may be twists and turns in the story that you don't know about yet. I had great help from the many photographers I worked with, and some of that was their own self-preservation. There's no point in going out on a story with the reporter and not coming back with it. So they're very incentivized to help you actually get the story, because it's a lot of hard work otherwise. And ultimately, you become comfortable with it, but you never become complacent with it, especially because when I started, there wasn't live television broadcast from the scene all the time. That sort of portable equipment that stations could afford to have multiple copies of was just beginning to arrive at stations. At my station in Omaha, I was there when we got the first live truck, and it was a truck. It was quite big. It was as big as a Medic One unit you see today. Ultimately, you just begin to realize that you're talking to people. You're not necessarily talking to a crowd. You're looking in that lens. Maybe you just think of it as a couple of people, and they're counting on you to explain something and show them something in a way that helps them understand why it's important, and in a way that makes sense to telling the story, in a way that's accurate, in a story they can follow. And certainly I didn't manage to do that every single time, but that was the goal every single time.
Now, did anything ever very bizarre happen to you? I mean, sometimes I've seen on YouTube, there's these clips of like reporters and there's somebody behind them and something weird happens, or was everything pretty normal when you had to cover stories?
Well, I did stories for 4 decades, so I'm sure, yeah, a few bizarre things did happen. One thing was sort of the dangerously bizarre. I was covering the aftermath of one of the more riotous May Day celebrations in Seattle, where there was always a very, very peaceful march that was done by unions. That march was always peaceful, but then others who had other points to make about May Day would mix in. I was broadcasting live on Second Avenue when literally talking on live television, when a couple of people came up and gave me a gentle and seemingly joyous hug live on television. But we always wondered if those were the same people who were wearing masks when they took wooden baseball bats to the windows at Nike Town a few blocks away, and maybe decided to come on television in that way to celebrate. I never had some of my colleagues did have streakers, people who were nude walk behind them. I never had anyone do that, although someone did capture a picture of someone who was almost nude walking behind a live shot. I don't think they were doing necessarily on purpose. They were just getting to wherever they were going in Seattle.
Just happened to be partially clothed. Let me ask you this. For somebody who's like a high school student or even a college student or even a middle school student who thinks, you know, I really want to be a journalist, and but I, what would you advise? How would you advise them to prepare? What kind of skills are necessary? And maybe what type of kind of temperament does somebody need to be a successful reporter or journalist?
You know, I would say, hopefully, you know, at your school, there's some sort of writing or journalistic activity. You know, maybe it's a school paper, maybe it's now a school news website, maybe that's not printed. And definitely, you know, find those folks, find that advisor, write about something you're interested in. Maybe you're interested in sports and you want to go to the games. Maybe you're interested in sports and you want to be the photographer. You know, sports especially requires pictures, and photography, you know, photojournalism is a key, crucial, and core part of what journalism is. So maybe you want to do something like that. You know, in terms of education, you know, certainly there are, you know, journalism degrees you can seek in college. A journalism degree is not required. Sometimes, you know, often a job will require a degree, but a lot of places, experiences in life, experiences that don't involve directly journalism are also valuable. You know, there are, I'm sure you will still run into journalists who had never graduated from college. And, you know, that may be more of an advantage than a disadvantage. And so journalists can come from many perspectives and experiences. I would advise, and looking back on it, I clearly should have, I would advise trying to be fluent in another language. You know, it could be Spanish, Chinese, Japanese, French, but I would try to be fluent in another language, especially a language that's maybe spoken in your hometown. You may not end up being a journalist in your hometown, but that would give you a start. There's much to be said about learning the history and tenets and practicing journalism. You know, maybe that's not your primary degree. You know, your primary degree could be any of the humanities, any of the sciences, because those things will give you insight. You know, as a journalist, you're not going to be covering newsrooms. You're going to be covering government, or you're going to be covering education. You're going to be covering, you know, business of some kind. Maybe it's a business that relies a lot on science. So, you know, having your degree in something, or a dual degree, but a degree in something that's not journalism, can also be helpful.
How about temperament? Well, you know, what is there a certain personality, or, I mean, one thing that comes to mind, you know, you mentioned about having to chase somebody down the street, and I've seen other reporters that have to, you know, be somewhat assertive or even aggressive trying to get the story. Is there a certain like temperament that you think, a toughness or whatever you want to call it, that's necessary to be a successful journalist?
I think ultimately you can be shy, but you have to be able to overcome it to do the job. So, you know, you might be shy in your personal life, but when you're working, you know, you need the ability to make calls to people who you don't think really want to pick up the phone, to knock on doors for people who you think might want to slam the door in your face once they realize it's you. So I would say, you know, persistence, some energy, the ability to have empathy, to sort of see things the way someone involved in the story might see or feel them. You know, my wonderful colleague Deborah Horn always says that We often meet people on the very worst day of their lives. It takes empathy to ask them if they would like to share a story of what has happened, maybe to a loved one, share some of the trauma that maybe they've had to experience. You know, and I would say it takes the willingness to accept responsibility. It takes integrity. You know, you'll have your own feelings about a story or about an issue, but then the question is, can you also see that there are others who might have other perspectives, and how can you include those in the story? It takes really a bundle of attributes, skills, and clearly no one journalist has a perfect balance of any of them, but we're always working from that bundle.
Now, you've been around for a while, and you've seen how journalism has changed or hasn't changed. I mean, I'm just thinking of, you know, when I was a child, like you mentioned, there's Walter Cronkite, and you had this, you know, the morning paper came to the front porch every day. You sat down and you went through the paper, and now it's all very, not all of it, but a lot of it is that very short, oh, I found this out on Facebook, or this, you know, I'm listening to this podcast, or I find out more things on my phone. I just get these little alerts. Oh, Michael Jackson died, you know, that kind of thing. It's not the, let's sit down and look at the evening news so much as it used to be. So how have you seen a change, and do you like all the changes, or are there certain things that you wish were different, or what? I mean, how do you feel? Cause you've been doing this over 30 years, right? So you've seen a lot of the changes.
Yeah, that's very, very kind of you to say it was only 30 years.
Since you were in the fourth grade, right?
Well, you know, perhaps the biggest change, and it's affected everything, and it started affecting everything a few decades ago. The biggest change is the speed at which events can be reported. You know, even before the widespread use of the internet, even before the internet was invented, television stations began to get equipment that let them broadcast things live from the scene. Well, if you can broadcast live from the scene, then the issue is, how much time will you have to gather information? On some stories, you know, you're not going to actually have much time to gather information. You can watch this in today's newscasts, where if there is, you know, some terrible accident or shooting in the middle of a newscast, you know, they will tell you, here's what happened. We are sending a team, you know, and maybe 30 minutes later, that team is there. They've had a chance really to gather just a few snippets of information, but they will broadcast what they know live. So that's the big change, because as a reporter, you need to be a good self-editor to be sure that when you know something's a fact, you say so. When you know something's uncertain, you say so. When you know something shouldn't be reported yet because it's pretty dramatic, but it might be completely wrong, you hold off. And a lot of times you're doing that in your head as you are talking live. That's the biggest change. The reporters, you know, imagine the reporters at the beginning of the 20th century, when all of a sudden they could use a telephone. You know, then their editors expected them to find telephones and report, you know, what they knew right away. And then, you know, someone back at their outlet, if it was a newspaper, they usually had someone called the rewrite. It used to always be a man, so they called the rewrite man. And a reporter from the scene would dictate facts that they've uncovered, quotes they've gotten from people, and it was the rewrite person who would assemble that into the coherent narrative. It's sort of the speed. Now we have, you not only have the speed that's provided by the internet, but you also have the fact that there are few barriers to publication. So anyone can do journalistic work, whether they call themselves a journalist or not. Then we as consumers of news, we as more mainstream producers of news, have to judge whether some snippet that we have seen on Facebook or Instagram or X is worthy of trying to confirm, worthy of reporting, because maybe it's been presented by someone you know and know you can trust. or how can you confirm it? So, there's a lot more streams of information to balance and juggle. And it's all very fast.
Yeah, a lot faster. I mean, I remember it was just, and again, I was writing features, so I could write a feature and it wouldn't come out for 3 days and I'd have all kinds of time to, oh, well, just get it to me in a couple of days kind of thing. And now it's like, grab the phone or get it, start texting. And it's just like a Roadrunner cartoon, basically. Any final thoughts, anything you just like to add?
Well, if you're the kind of person who, just has to tell the news and is always talking about whether it's the news, in your family, the news around school, the big stories that you see online or on TV. If you're that kind of person, think of yourself as a journalist. Think of journalism as a career. It is, it's very important. The journalism that reflect all facets and perspectives of our many communities. There's nothing worse than a newsroom that is monochromatic. So think about it as potential. If you're going to college, even if you don't select journalism as a major, you might decide to do some journalism courses, to do some work for the school news outlets. And see if it's something that makes sense to you. There are many journalists who start off and ultimately move on to other different careers, but they've made a contribution while they were in journalism.
Oh, that's great. I mean, that's a great way to kind of wrap it up with a little bow. So thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to All the Way Authentic. Special thanks to our special guest, Essex Porter. This has been All the Way Authentic. I'm your host, Kevin P. Henry.